think my best encouragement is each day you're going to feel a little bit better than you did before. The increments might be so small that you sometimes don't notice it, but it keeps getting better.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential.
Emily Thoreau Threatt is the author of Loving and Living Your Way Through Grief, a comprehensive guide to reclaiming and cultivating joy and carrying on in the face of loss. After losing two husbands to illness, Emily began writing to help heal her grief. She soon discovered how effective writing is and began helping other people experiencing a tragic loss. Emily Thoreau Threatt. Threatt. Okay. Emily, is that French?
Yes. My husband's father was from France.
Oh, okay. Very good. Very good. Okay. So Emily, I'm so happy to have you. Yes. We had some mishaps for those listening, but we are so happy that we finally connected. And Emily is the author of A Loving and Living Your Way Through Grief, a comprehensive guide to reclaiming and cultivating joy and carrying on in the face of loss. So I know you have like this amazing story. I mean, it's just, I don't even know where to start. No, I do know where to start. Tell me first, Emily, when did you first learn that writing was kind of your thing? Not even maybe necessarily as a tool for healing, but when did you first start to really appreciate the art of writing and realize you were good at it?
Actually, in junior high school.
Mm.
I spent a lot of time alone because my parents, we owned an ambulance company that we operated off the property that we lived on where the ambulances were. And frequently I was by myself because it was just mom and dad and I, and I would be sitting there waiting to dispatch ambulances. But besides that, I was just by myself. So I started writing to kind of entertain myself, and I just loved it. It just was a place that I could create my own world of my own friends, and where people were there to talk to and could write conversations. And it became kind of a thing. It wasn't writing that I showed anybody. It was just writing that I really enjoyed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so funny. Cause when I talk to most writers about, especially, it's so interesting, the writers that I talk to, that use writing as a tool for healing, when I ask them, when did you first like start really appreciating the art of writing? It's always like, I wrote privately for myself, just, you know, usually as some type of diary or journal, just as a way of expressing and getting stuff out, not necessarily as a, you know, wanting to share it with people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And you know what? I just noticed that we're both wearing almost the same shade of yellow.
Yeah. I thought that was funny.
Okay. It really looks good on you. I can say that.
Yeah, lovely. You too.
Thank you. Okay. So junior high school, you mentioned your family owned an ambulance company.
I still do.
You still do?
Mm-hmm.
In California?
In California, in Porterville, California, actually.
Wow. Oh, wow. I've never met someone who owned an ambulance company.
There are a lot of us out here because most of them have been taken over by the big organizations, but we've been a small ambulance company since 1960.
Wow. Wow. Okay. That's really interesting. Okay. So you started in junior high school. Then you become an adult. And I know you had a lot of loss in your life. Is this when you started to use writing as a tool to help you get through grief? When did that first start?
That really started after the death of my first husband to die, because I've used writing forever. I discovered I really liked it to the point that my master's degree is in English, but it's a concentration in writing. And I've taught writing at Cal State University, which I actually taught for Lancaster.
So you did?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was teaching online, but I would come out to Lancaster and meet with the students every once in a while when I had Lancaster students in my class online.
That is so funny. And you know what? I actually graduated from Cal State Dominguez Hill. I have a master's in English with a concentration in rhetoric composition.
How funny. We've got a lot in common.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Okay, so earned a master's. Mm-hmm. Now, did you earn your master's before you lost your first husband or after?
No, after. He actually, it was kind of through his inspiration that I got back into the writing, because I journaled, but that was basically all I did. But I ended up getting my bachelor's degree was in fine arts with a concentration in theater. And once I got it, it was like, oops, great. I had great fun in college, but now what do I do?
Emily, my bachelor's is in music.
Oh, that's funny.
There's so many similarities here. That's so funny. Okay.
So he suggested that I might want to teach writing, because I'd written a lot in getting my bachelor's, and he knew that I enjoyed it a lot. And he was a professor at Bakersfield College, and he talked to a couple of his friends who were teaching writing, and they offered to let me go to their classes to observe for a full semester, both of them for a full semester. Mm-hmm. And I ended up working for them. They hired me to do grading of writing. And the more I did it, and the more I watched them teach, I kept thinking, I could do this. This is really cool. And so I ended up doing it. Mm-hmm. And then I got my master's degree, and I got the Outstanding Graduate Student Award graduation for my thesis that I'd written. Wow. And I thought, you know, I've got something here. I really need to pay attention to this. Mm-hmm. And so I did. And I wrote more. I wrote 3 college textbooks. I love teaching students to write and bring out their creativity.
You wrote 3 college textbooks?
Uh-huh.
Are they all about writing?
Uh-huh.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Yeah,
it was really fun. I just enjoyed the whole process and everything about it. And then after Ron died, my second husband to die died, we had moved to Maui. We came here because he'd lived here a long time before, and when he realized how his health was failing, he said he really wanted to be on Maui. So we moved. And we were together 2 wonderful years here. And then when he was gone, I didn't know that many people here yet. And I just was trying to figure out what I was supposed to do now. So I started writing just for myself, journaling, figuring out what it was that I wanted to do, what brought me joy, who I wanted to be associated with, how I wanted the rest of my life to go. Mm-hmm. And I started finding things that I was writing really helped me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, this is cool. So I decided I wanted to teach other people who were dealing with loss how to write in a way that would help them.
Right. Now, how far between, like, after your first husband passed,
mm-hmm.
how many years later did your second husband pass?
Well, Jacques died in 2007, and Ron died in 2017.
Okay, so 10 years. Wow.
Yeah.
I can't even...
Jacques was 2006. I'm sorry.
I can't even imagine. I mean, were you, after the second husband died, were you upset? I mean, I would be upset after the first husband died, but
both of them I was. The second one was different because Ron and I really lived in the moment. We were focusing on what was good and wonderful in our lives, even though he was dealing with a lot of health issues.
This was your second husband, Ron.
That's my second husband. Where with Jacques, he was pretty sick, and we were focusing on all of his health issues as mm-hmm. opposed to focusing on enjoying the moments that we were living. So with Ron, when we approached it that way, it ended up that we spent all our time together, even if it was going to the hospital or going to dialysis or something like that. But we did everything together. We talked. There was nothing left unsaid. We explored everything we could think of to in writing. And when it got to the point where he was having difficulty seeing well enough to read, I read to him aloud. Somebody mm-hmm. gave him a book about 6 weeks before he died for a birthday present. And he said, I really would like to read this, but I just can't see the words. And so I read it to him, the whole book.
Wow.
And it was really good. So we came from a good place when he died, but I was still devastated because right up until he died, everything was so good and wonderful. The whole process of the week before he died was amazing, with people coming over from the mainland and family being there. And he FaceTimed everybody he wanted to talk to that didn't get to come to see him. And so he kind of orchestrated his last days. And yeah. So it was great. And I think it was so good that it made it a little bit harder mm-hmm. when he was gone, because I missed that. I missed that being together, being so focused on how good life was for us. Mm-hmm. So it was really my intention to keep my life good on my own. It was worth it, you know.
Yeah.
I needed to do that for myself. And so starting to teach other people to deal with loss using the writing methods that I'd figured out helped me was just great. I started a meetup group, so I didn't know anybody in the group, and they all came to my house, and we formed a really good relationship. And we first were going to meet once a month, and they said, oh, we need to meet more often than that. So we started meeting every other week. And it was, we would write, I'd give them something to write about, they'd write, and then we'd share our writing and talk about our experiences. And it was just so good. And then the pandemic happened and we had to stop meeting on ground.
Yeah.
And most of them weren't real excited about doing it on the computer with Zoom or anything. Mm. So I started a Facebook group, Writing Through Grief with Emily, that people can join. And I do a writing prompt once a week there, and we can post. And a lot of times people don't post what they write. They don't share as much on the Facebook group, but they'll contact me and talk to me about what they're writing, which is cool. Mm-hmm. But I really like that. So I started doing a Zoom class for anybody who wants to on Saturdays. It's at 11 o'clock my time for an hour, and it doesn't cost anything. And just whoever comes, I send out a link to whoever would like to come. And we do the same sort of thing we had done on ground. I give them something to write about. We write, and then we talk about what we wrote. And mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's just amazing, the experiences that come through that.
So how, because my mother was recently, right around the time of the pandemic broke out, December 2019, she was diagnosed with stage 3 lymphoma. That was, that was just devastating. And thank God she's still with us. She's in remission currently, but just the news of that, I never experienced pain, like emotional pain like that, and fear and all that, you know, stuff. And I did journal a lot, just writing out all of my feelings. How can someone who is experiencing some type of grief, like what are some writing exercises you guide them through?
Well, I'll tell you the one that they like the most, and they keep wanting to do it in different variations. And that's when I have them write a letter to their loved one, the one who has, in their case, all of them had already died. So they write a letter to the loved one telling them anything that they want to tell them, whatever they want to talk about. If it's what's currently going on and they really wish they could talk to them and know what they thought about it, whatever that is, they'll write that and express anything that's unsaid, because so many people aren't fortunate enough to have felt like they've said everything they wanted to say before somebody dies. And they do that. And then when they finish it, I say, okay, now write another letter. And this letter is going to be from who you just wrote that letter to back to you.
Mm.
And I said, don't think about it. Just start writing and let it flow. Don't take your pen off the paper. Just keep writing until the letter is done. And they just love it. They say they find so many things that they hadn't thought of. They felt comfort from getting something off their chest.
Yeah.
Felt forgiveness over something that they thought that they'd really hurt the person about, and they see whatever it is. And I can't tell you exactly where that second letter is coming from, a higher source or your heart or wherever it is, but wherever it comes from, it's so healing for the people that do that exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they'll do it to a thing instead of a person, like do it to, in your case, you could write a letter to lymphoma.
Mm-hmm.
And see what comes out, and then have lymphoma write a letter back to you, because you're fortunate enough that your mom's there, and that's really wonderful. But what's the lesson in the lymphoma?
Yeah. And you know, Emily, I just want to make sure, because I can hear your mic rubbing against something. Is it your hair? I don't know.
I think it's I was fiddling with my fingers.
So, oh, okay. Sorry. So make sure we don't have that interruption. But so I love the idea of writing to the lymphoma. Because when you were talking, I was thinking, and I was actually thinking about this when she was initially diagnosed, writing her a letter. It just, I feel so emotionally overwhelmed when I think of doing that. And I don't know if that means that that's something I really need to do then, if I'm feeling all that emotional overwhelm. So that, and I think I am going to like follow through with that, because as I age, it's so funny how you don't really, I'll just speak for myself. I didn't really appreciate my parents until I was like in my late 30s. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've always loved them, obviously, but there's something about as I age, as I become more mature, I realize it more so what they went through as like young adults raising me and my brother. And then I have friends who have lost their parents, you know, and then my friends are about my age and their parents are, and my parents are still alive. And it's just the appreciation for them gets deeper as I age. Now that my mother has this diagnosis, that's put another layer of like appreciation.
Yes.
Right? And so I really feel that sometimes that urge to just to write like just straight from the heart to her, because I don't think I've ever done that, you know, except like in like birthday cards, or I might write a short little message or something, but to write a letter.
Oh, yeah. To write a letter to her now while you can would be so wonderful. She would cherish it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I literally love the lymphoma idea, because I do this exercise now, currently, where I have some type of issue that I'm experiencing or some hardship, I will just type out the question or write out the question, write or type. I prefer typing, actually, when I'm journaling, but I'll type out the question and then I'll just kind of sit in silence. And then whatever response kind of just comes to me without me like trying to like think about it or formulate it or manipulate it, I just kind of like let it out through my fingers or through my pen. And that kind of reminds me of the exercise that you work with your clients, where you just have them write to their loved one who's deceased, and then whatever message comes back to them through via a letter, you know, that is what comes out. And it just, yeah, you don't really know where it comes from, but it's when you read it after you've written it, it's so powerful.
It's amazing. It's amazing what you can find out doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you teach a class specifically on grief and writing?
It's not a class. It's more of facilitating a group of people to do that. And we do that all the time.
And that's the Facebook group.
There's a Facebook group. And then I have people here on Maui that we're beginning to get back together again, socially distanced and everything outside, which we can do most things outside here far apart. So it works really well.
Yeah, yeah.
In any way that I can get to do it, and sometimes through my Facebook groups. I have another group that's the name of my book, Loving and Living Your Way Through Loss. That's a group that people can join, and they kind of write different things. It's not that they're interested in writing, they just want support, and so they go through that to do that. So I like to be available in a lot of different ways. And then in my book, there are 26 chapters, and at the end of each chapter, there's something active that the person can do to help them deal with their grief. And lots of them are writing exercises, but not all of them are. So that's a good way to write too.
Yeah, I don't know if you were the one that mentioned that you knew, oh my gosh, I can't even remember his name, but I interviewed him recently on humor and grief.
Alan?
Yes, Alan Klein.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
He is so awesome.
Yes, and I love how when I was interviewing him, he said that, because I asked him, did you ever feel guilty for the laughter that you experienced after his wife had passed away years ago? And he said no, because they shared so much laughter when she was alive, and she was just a very funny person, that after she died, he felt that he was honoring her memory through his laughter. And I thought, that's so powerful.
It is so powerful,
right?
It's wonderful. I love to talk to him. We're actually going to be on a panel together in December, a big national panel.
Really?
Yeah, I'm really excited about that coming up, because he's so much fun to be around and to talk to. And I love the positive energy.
Yes, yes. And so I was going to ask, in your grieving process, did you use humor at all, or laughter, or did that
As opposed to laughter, I would say happiness and joy. I really focus on that, because people tend to think that when they're grieving, they have this obligation to be sad and down all the time. And when I introduce the concept to them that it's okay to be happy and grieve at the same time, a lot of times they're very resistant, because they think that's somehow dishonoring the person who died.
Yeah.
But then I say, you know, would that person want you to be sad all the time?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that person really enjoy your smile, wanting to see you happy? And that starts kind of breaking the ice with them some, and they can start seeing that, well, yeah, maybe I can do that. And I encourage them to find something to be happy about and focus on that. And that really helps. They start finding more things to be happy about, and that can kind of lift you. It's not, people have this misconception that you can get over grief. You know, that it goes away, that you do it for a certain period of time and you're done.
Yeah.
That's not how grief works.
Yeah.
You know, my husbands are always dead. You know, I won't see them again. And I love them both and will love them both for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And when I was with Ron, I still could love Jacques, even though I was physically in contact with Ron and in love with him, it didn't prevent me from loving both of them. I use the example for people of your parents. You don't love one or the other. You can love them both and love them both very much, and that's okay. So when you focus on love and kindness in your writing and in what you do, then everything gets more beautiful and kinder and gentler.
How did you, after your second husband passed, how did you cultivate or begin to cultivate happiness?
Just in what I was doing. If I would turn the TV on or wanted to watch a movie, I'd watch something positive. If I read a book, I would read something that's basically positive. Now, I'm not talking about like Pollyanna phony stuff, but the things that are make you feel good things. And when that's what you surround yourself with, then your mood is going to improve just kind of naturally.
And
everything that you focus on, that when I talk to people, I always say something positive, genuine and positive. It's not flip. It's something genuine about them or about what's going on, or focusing on that instead of focusing on negativity. We have a tendency to focus on the news, focus on all the things that are going wrong in our country right now, all the pandemic, you know, and if you can get lost in all that, you know, it can just swallow you up, and you're not going to be happy when that's all you focus on. So if you can find ways to focus in the opposite direction, then that really helps.
Yeah. And I know, Emily, it didn't just, I mean, you've had other people pass away in your life, even after your husband's, like you mentioned your parents.
My parents were quite a while ago, but my sister just died in November.
Oh, your sister. So, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty recent for me.
And does grieving, I don't know if this is even, it sounds like a silly question, but does it ever get easier?
I wouldn't say easier. It loses its sting, if that makes sense. So that when I realize something is happening, like, for instance, Monday was my birthday. And when I had birthdays with both husbands, both their birthdays and my birthdays, they were always a really special time.
Yeah,
we would do things together. We always made them fun, and it was really cool. And this birthday, for some reason, I didn't hear from very many people. I really felt kind of alone, and I got kind of teary. And I thought, okay, just going to go with this. You know, I'm feeling this way, and I need to work my way through it. And I did, and I eventually posted something about it on one of my Facebook groups, and the support was astounding, the things that people contacted me with. It just felt so good, and I thought, it's okay to feel it every once in a while. The thing is to just not live there.
And does the writing help you to not live there?
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because I can choose what I'm going to write about. The writing often takes off in its own direction, but I choose what I want to write about. My book, for example, when I wrote it, it actually was 52 chapters long. And now the second part, the next 26 chapters are going to be published also. But I had a contract for the number of words that were in 52 chapters. And when they gave it to the editor, she said that a book of this kind won't sell that long. We have to cut it about in half. And I said, well, we've got a contract. We can still use all the book and just do it in two parts. So that's what they're doing. So it started with 52 chapters because I wrote a really good friend of my husband's just dropped dead about 7 months after he did. He was much younger than Ron. He called Ron Dad, which was kind of cute.
Yeah.
Because Ron was your complexion and Chappie was mine. And when he would call Ron Dad, they'd go, what? they always had fun with that. And I was so concerned for Chap's wife because she was young. She, I'm sure, hadn't even had a clue that her husband would die. Not at that point, you know, so that was something far in the future and nothing to worry about at that point. So I wanted to do something to support her, and I ended up writing her 52 cards. I sent her one each week for the first year after Chap was gone. And I actually wrote them all at once because when I decided I wanted to do it, I thought I need to know that I've got something that I can sustain for 52 weeks. And I did. I thought, okay, at this point, what was I thinking about? At this point, what was I experiencing? And I wrote them out. And after I got them done and started writing them to her, I thought, you know, as my writer's brain, you've got an outline here. And so I got an agent and found a publisher, and that's where my book came from.
Oh my, that's so wonderful. So when you say, they like postcards or like?
No, they're like, what I did, I made them on my computer. Since I live on Maui, I'm addicted to taking pictures on my phone because there's always something beautiful that you're seeing. So I had tons of gorgeous tropical pictures. So I made the cards so that they were, I took a cardstock and I could get two cards on a piece of cardstock. So they'd fold over in half, and they were, you know, the size of
a greeting card?
Half of a page, you know, folded over a greeting card, and there are envelopes that size. So I put one of the pictures on the front, and then I put whatever it was that was the thought for that week inside. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've done that for several other people now that since I did that for her, and it feels good to me. It helps me with healing and keeping positive to be doing that and to be sending them out every week. And with doing it, I had 52 different things to write on. So I would concentrate on each chapter individually with what I was writing about for that chapter. It's not a memoir. Lots of grief books are memoirs. And I do include my stories in it, but I also include stories of other people that I interviewed who had dealt with loss about how they did it. Yeah. And then at the end of each chapter, I have something related to that chapter that they can actively do to help them deal with their grief.
For 52 consecutive weeks. That's amazing. And I bet she just loved it.
Yes, she did. As a matter of fact, when I did the book launch, we did it online because of the pandemic. And so I had people who were involved in the process of the book or who knew me and my writing and things do a little video clip, and then I strung them all together for a film that I showed during the book launch. And she did a beautiful like testimony for how much the cards helped her. And she stood there with the cards in her hand like that. She had every single one of them. She had them in her hand like that. And she said how much they helped. And that was just like a confirmation to me that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yes. Yeah. And I love how you just repurposed them and made a book. I mean, that's a wonderful story, Emily.
Well, thank you.
I am so happy that we had this conversation.
Oh, good.
I feel like, I mean, this is going to be so valuable for a lot of people who are going through grief, because it just seems like when you're going through that process, there's just like this dark cloud that's never going to go away.
That's right.
Feel suffocated underneath it. But to know that you have written a book to help us process the grief, to help us get through the grief through writing and other exercises that you have in there is so encouraging. And to hear you share your stories is also very encouraging. So thank you so much for taking this time. Thank you for connecting with me, even though I'm sorry about the Zoom link, but yes. I'm so happy that we got this time together. Why don't you tell us where we can find you?
Everything's related to the name of my book. So my website is lovingandlivingyourwaythroughgrief.com. Mm-hmm. The book is sold, and it's traditionally published, so you can get it any place you get books. There's, of course, a link on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any of the small booksellers. It's available. Mm-hmm. My email address is emily@lovingandlivingyourwaythroughgrief.com. Mm-hmm. I'm on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and all those things to be able to reach as many people as I can to help.
Yeah. And Dee, I want to give you this opportunity. If you have any final words of encouragement or wisdom for someone who is experiencing a loss.
I think my best encouragement is each day you're going to feel a little bit better than you did before. The increments might be so small that you sometimes don't notice it, mm-hmm. but it keeps getting better. And that when you are able to get to the point where you know you're holding your love and your grief in your heart in a very positive way, then you can be happy. You can smile. And it's a good thing to both grieve and be happy at the same time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Emily. I'm going to stop recording, but I'm just going to chat with you for a moment. Wait. Oh, yeah. I was about to say, was I recording this? Yes, I was. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Okay, so I'm going to stop recording and just chat with you for a moment. I am so happy I had the honor and the opportunity to interview Emily, because after listening to her explain her grieving process or what she went through and how writing helped her to get through that process was very encouraging for me, and I'm sure it's encouraging for anyone out there listening who is also experiencing grief or has experienced grief, because it's like when it hits you, it hits you. And when you're experiencing that type of pain, to
also not have any tools to help you process the pain in a healthy way it's even more devastating, and it just kind of intensifies the pain of the loss. So please visit Emily's website and read her book. Yes, Loving and Living Your Way Through Grief. Visit her social media also and her Facebook group, because she has some wonderful resources and tools to help anyone who is experiencing a tragic loss. And in the meantime, you can also visit zazo.com and sign up for my newsletter. And I just started a Facebook group today. Can you believe it? And I'm a little lonely in there, so join my Facebook group. It's called Energy Healing with Ebony. And I'm really hoping to do some, mostly a lot of live streaming through that group. So I would love for you to join me. And you can visit my Instagram. Well, my Facebook is at Motivation to Write. Instagram is at Motivation to Write. Twitter is at Ebony Haywood. And yep, that's all the places. Thank you so much for joining me. And I look forward to next week when I talk to another fabulous guest. Bye-bye.